Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by Josh today, and we're going to be talking about unconscious bias training, sometimes known as diversity training or myriad of different names.
Well, diversity training is kind of the umbrella that it comes under, but unconscious bias training is something very specific, and it is predicated on some actual scientific research. I would like to clear up the kind of the fact from the fiction and where the limitations of this evidence can go and the implications you can draw from it as well.
Yeah, so we wanted to explain what unconscious bias training is, and if you're undergoing it, to what would be going on, and also if you're in a position in a company that's implementing this sort of thing, why you probably shouldn't. You probably should just save your cash. This is a waste of your time.
Yeah,
and I'll let you explain because
Of course. This comes after the UK government has decided to ban unconscious bias training along with diversity training. And I actually wrote an article about this, where I discussed the evidence for this and why the government decided to do this. And basically, there's a whole host of reasons for both diversity training and unconscious bias training. And I've got all of my evidence and sources there. So if you want to actually look up the research studies that I'm talking about, you can find them all here. And you don't necessarily have to search for them yourself. I've linked them all in. Okay, so I think the first thing that we need to clear up is what the unconscious actually is in unconscious bias training, because what people don't realise is that it's very difficult to define what it is and what it isn't. So I'm just curious to know what you think the unconscious mind is.
I assume it's the thoughts you have that you don't necessarily know that you're thinking about.
So yeah,
the things you assume about a person, mm-hmm. but you wouldn't be able to say them.
Kind of the working definition of what the unconscious mind is that it's a collection of mental processes that occur automatically beyond your own awareness. And that is kind of the key, although there is still a huge amount of dispute in psychology between how we kind of delineate what is the conscious mind and what is the unconscious, because it's not entirely clear where that line is drawn, because these sorts of systems are spread across a disparate number of regions. They're not necessarily refined to clearly definable brain regions, so it's difficult to say, okay, this is part of your unconscious mind and this isn't, because some brain areas are involved in both and you can't delineate either of those. And these definitions can vary. There's obviously the unconscious mind originates with Sigmund Freud. He was the first one to coin the unconscious mind, and I think that's his major contribution to modern psychology, because his kind of conception of the concept of the unconscious mind is his idea of the unconscious mind is still relatively accurate to the modern day, whereas his other theories like the Oedipus complex, are laughable in the modern day.
That's the one about the penis envy, isn't it?
That's the thing in and of itself. Yeah, okay. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on with him. But the kind of psychoanalysis approach is also very different to the cognitive psychologist approach, which is a position that's kind of emerged from the 60s onwards, and it looks at mathematical modelling, and it tries to take as many assumptions out of the study of the unconscious mind as possible, and it just tries to use empirical data. And this is the approach that I use when I research the unconscious mind. And just to briefly go into it, I actually did have a look at unconscious decision making. So I looked at people's reaction times to different compound words, and I wanted to see whether people perceived words in fragments or whether they looked at them as a whole and then broke them down into their kind of constituent parts. And that's just...
Okay, so that's what the unconscious is. Where does the training come into this?
Well, I'm going to kind of belabor the point of what the unconscious is a bit more, because it's so poorly defined. I want to be very specific about what it includes and what it doesn't. So, for example, while you're listening to what I'm saying, you're not having to consciously recall the definition of all the words I'm using. You're not thinking, okay, he's using the word the, and then you've got the definition popping up in your head. You don't need to do that. Once you've learnt to speak a language, the meaning behind the words is kind of processed unconsciously. You might be consciously focused on the meaning of what all of those words mean in context, but you're not actually having to actively process the meaning in your kind of conscious mind. And that's quite a good example, because all languages are kind of contrived, it shows that you can consciously learn something and put it into your unconscious mind, because obviously when children are learning a language, they don't necessarily know how to speak it, how to write it, and this is all learnt behaviour, and it becomes second nature, and that is simply passing from the conscious mind into the unconscious mind. So it's not necessarily a clearly defined separation where nothing can pass in between the two. And I'm just going to go on to unconscious biases and why they have a negative connotation that they don't necessarily need to have, just because of how people talk about them in kind of public dialogue outside of science. So if you could kind of come up with a few unconscious biases you might think people might have. I don't know. I'm putting you on the spot a little bit there, but...
Oh, no, I mean... What, like an unconscious bias against certain types of food or something like that? What do you mean?
Well, I mean, that's a fine example, because people may not necessarily consciously think of their own preferences. So someone might, I don't know, prefer carrots to potatoes or something. And they haven't sat down and thought about, you know, the pros and cons of eating each one. That would be really weird. It's more of an automatic process, and what I want to get across is that these biases exist for a reason. It's not wholly negative, although in kind of unconscious bias training, the framing is that these unconscious biases are negative. And I mean, if they bias you against people of certain races, then I would actually say, yeah, fair enough, that is a negative thing. But as I'll get onto later, there's not necessarily any evidence to suggest that this manifests. Yeah. So you can come up with lots of different unconscious biases, some more available to the conscious mind than others. Like if you touch something hot, you don't think, I've got to take my finger away. You do it automatically. So it's like an unconscious bias against feeling pain. And this is more automatic or more unconscious than, say, the language aspect, which is something that has to be learnt. So depending on the context in which the unconscious bias exists, depends on how ingrained it is. You can't really unlearn to keep your hand on something that's hot. It's automatic to draw your hand away from it. And I don't think it's either desirable or possible to unlearn that unconscious bias. And I think it is worth pointing out that these things do have purposes, and it's just that they don't have a purpose anymore in some cases, and that is where this unconscious bias training supposedly comes in. And I could also touch on some higher kind of processing unconscious unconscious biases, which is confirmation bias. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the term, but it's essentially the tendency to search for and interpret and favour information which supports your own preconceptions about the world, rather than acknowledging information that is counter to your own views. And it can reflect how you look at the world and how you seek out further information. And this is something...
So there's the great example of planes coming back during the war with all the wings shut up. So they started reinforcing the wings, but it didn't change because, of course, the ones coming back with the wings shot up were the ones that survived. You needed
that's
to
a good
reinforce
example,
the other
yeah.
areas.
And this is something that can be altered. So you can kind of avoid confirmation bias more through conscious effort than you can say other things, because you can say, okay, I'm looking for information here. I know I might be inclined to seek out information that validates my own position, but it is not good to do this because I might be taking a biased approach. And in that case, you can mitigate the bias consciously, perhaps, even though it is part of your unconscious mind. And this will become key later on, because one of the kind of founding principles on which unconscious bias training is predicated is that you make a conscious intervention to your unconscious mind. But I will get into why this doesn't actually apply to things like unconscious biases in race or gender in a minute. So I'd like to quickly run over the unconscious bias training evidence, which is relatively limited. And actually, one of the best places to go if you want something really comprehensive, I think there's a 113-page document which talks about all of the different evidence that was made by the Equalities and Human Rights Commission in the UK. And it breaks down all of the scientific research and the justification for the UK government banning its use in any government buildings and on any government staff, of course. So the unconscious bias training is predicated on something known as the implicit association test, which implicit is just another word for the unconscious mind. It's like implicit, explicit, conscious, unconscious. They're basically interchangeable. There's not really much of a functional difference between the two. But essentially, what they're trying to do with this is raise people's awareness of the extent of their biases. That is the rationale behind running these training sessions. So what they do is they will get people to take this test, and then they'll see the extent of their bias, and then they'll try and have some kind of intervention to mitigate this bias, essentially. However, at a kind of conceptual level, this doesn't really make sense, because for an individual to be aware of something, it cannot be related to the unconscious. And although they're trying to say that these unconscious bias tests are revealing their bias, it's limited in what they can do about it, because if you think about a modern society, there's nothing more taboo than being perhaps racist or sexist. But then people can take these implicit association tests, and it'll say you have these biases, but it may not necessarily manifest in any of your conscious thoughts or behavior. And that is the difference between something like confirmation bias, where you can kind of sever this tie between the two. And what I would like to kind of focus on is that the entire training is focused around a misconceptualization of what the unconscious mind is and how it can be influenced, because much of the research validating it says that you can consciously be made aware, and through having your awareness raised, then you can just mitigate this bias all of a sudden.
But if it's unconscious, surely you can't.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very weird misunderstanding, because one of the only really clear dividing lines between the conscious mind and the unconscious mind is whether we're aware of it. I mean, obviously, if we're unaware of it, we can't be conscious of it. So it kind of raises the question of, if you have these unconscious biases, you're not going to be aware of where they're going to be relevant, really. You're not going to know. So having
said, it just makes you hypersensitive to things around whatever they've told you.
Yeah, well, this is what has been pointed out. And there's been some evidence to suggest that these trainings actually make people more racially sensitive and can actually result in people becoming more racist And I'm using that as an example, but obviously... But
it's the reason the far left end up like the way they are, where they're obsessing over, like, I don't know, whitelisting or blacklisting on websites, you know, a term for whether or not in tech. Who cares? Like, it's obviously just them being so oversensitive that they're like, okay, this could be something.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually the term that they use in the scientific literature. They say that it makes you hypersensitive to issues, and they talk about how people may potentially avoid talking to, after this training, they may avoid talking to people who they think, oh, I might have an unconscious bias, just to avoid any embarrassment. So
they're essentially training them to ignore black and brown people, is that?
In a sense, okay. As like an indirect thing.
That's the anti-racism training at work.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it is known as a backfire effect, where people go to this training and essentially, if it's not followed up upon very carefully, people can think of it like the main takeaway being, okay, I've got this bias, but people are really focused on it and I've got to kind of step on eggshells to avoid anything. So it's just better that I avoid people that I have been proven to be biased against.
Yeah, I don't know how much inference I'm taking from this, but a more sinister example in my mind would be the grooming gang scandal. So the fact that the police openly said in the J report, we didn't investigate these particular criminals because they were of a certain background. And we know that all of them undergo diversity training. They probably still do in the police force. I don't know if after this they're changing it. So I'm going to say that probably influenced their actions in policing, which then led to criminals getting away with crimes.
I mean, it's difficult to say for certain, but it's certainly possible.
I can see a real world link there. You know, unproven, just my interjection.
Well, I mean, it's going to have a tangible effect on someone because the justification for doing these forms of training is that it's making people more able to interact in civil society. So it's framed as helping people to interact with one another. And
but if you get the backfire effect you were mentioning,
yeah,
like, does the opposite.
And I'd also like to bring up the fact that people who are actually like biased, as in legitimately and objectively biased, it makes their biases worse because...
So if we're trying to... Because most of this is obviously aimed at racists. So it's trying to make racists less racist, if that's, you know, if we're being crude.
Yeah.
So if a person who is genuinely racist comes in, takes this training, it makes their biases worse, you're saying?
Yeah. So not only do people resent being forced to do something against their will a lot of the time.
Shock.
Yeah. Who would have guessed? Especially if it's combating against beliefs that they already hold. And the kind of evidence suggests that these training sessions, in the workplace at least, only really show some evidence of effectiveness when people are volunteering, which also begs the question, well, if they're volunteering already, aren't they already receptive to the messages being taught? Because they're saying, okay, I want to take time out of my day to learn about this. Then it kind of suggests that they're already kind of on board with the surrounding philosophy of why this training is being conducted. Whereas when people are made to take these tests as a compulsory part of their work, what you tend to find is that people resent that, even if they don't have any biases, and they will kind of say, well, these people in my company are making me take these tests, they're being really oversensitive, and supposedly it makes people hold a grudge. And there's evidence to suggest, for example, that in businesses, after taking I think this was diversity training, but the backfire effect affects both, they actually reduced the number of women they hired, which is completely counterproductive to
the goals they had, which was equity.
Yeah. And essentially what they kind of derive from interviews with the staff is that these people who were made to do this training kind of resented it and then held it against the women in the company. They're like, well, they're just being really oversensitive, and the fact that I have to do this training is evidence of that, even though
I can see that reasoning entirely. Mm-hmm. Like, I know why they'd get to that position.
But to play devil's advocate here, I would say that a lot of the time it's not from push from employees to do this testing. It's more
it's human corporate.
Yeah, it's like human resources, and it's also very good in a legal kind of perspective, because if you've got these unconscious bias training sessions, it looks externally very good. And if, for example, an employee says something in their private life which is perceived to be prejudiced, then they can say, well, we as an employer did everything that we could to mitigate against that, because we
put them through the re-education.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a way of washing their hands of any responsibility a lot of the time. So the actual content isn't necessarily important. It's the legal ramifications of having encouraged people to do this form of training that is important.
And so it's completely fake, essentially, for the corporate side of this, where they're just using it as a paper shield.
Yeah, well, it
for them,
from a business standpoint, they're only doing this training to cover themselves for legal costs. If it doesn't really matter to a business whether people are prejudiced, really. I mean,
I don't think Wetherspoons actually cares if its staff are prejudiced or not. It's just, does the job get done? So this is just a way of protecting themselves.
It's all about money at the end of the day, in the corporate world, at the very least. That's why people get others to do the training. It's not because it's effective. There's very limited evidence to suggest that. And in many cases, it's actually reinforcing these ideas. And
even I'm in agreement that, you know, say Wetherspoons do hire a bunch of prejudiced people. You know, does it really matter? Like, if they don't act on their prejudices, you know, even within the workplace, maybe they'll say some stupid stuff offline. Okay, whatever, that's their private life. But if they don't do anything in the workplace, you know, they do the job they're asked.
Sure.
Do I care?
I think the argument against that would be that, say, if it were a customer service role, they'd be dealing with a vast array of people. And if they were prejudiced,
yeah, it's just,
it wouldn't be good.
If they act on it, then yeah, I can see a reason for being irritated. But if they don't, then okay.
Well, I think where an employer's domain ends is what's in your head. Mm. I don't think they have a right to interfere with what's in your head, even though I...
At least in any liberal society.
Yeah. And although I agree that, you know, racism and sexism are bad, I don't necessarily think people should be forced to take this training, which is unproven.
Like, I also think communism's abhorrent, but I'm not going to force employees to take, like, anti-communist training or something like this. Because that would be obviously a breach of, you know, human rights.
Yeah, exactly. People should be free to think what they want, even if you disagree with what they want. And that is the kind of ethical argument. And just to go back on a bit more of the evidence, I would also like to bring up the point that I thought was quite funny, is that in bringing up certain negative unconscious biases, it actually makes them more readily available, and therefore people are more likely to have them in mind and enact them. And then they used an example of talking about racial stereotypes actually increased the likelihood of adopting racial stereotypes, even if they were talked about in a negative sense. So just in kind of giving them a platform, it seems that some people will adopt these, even if they don't want to. They'll still be more readily available in mind.
Yeah. So even if you disagree and you think, no, we must re-educate the staff of Wetherspoons to be less, you know, so-and-so, well, it doesn't even work. And it may even make it worse. So
yeah. So you can kind of use the example of, if you talk about, I don't know, negative racial stereotypes, you're going to have this more readily available in your mind. And therefore, next time you come into a situation where you might need to consider race, these stereotypes are going to come to the surface more readily than they would have otherwise. So simply addressing these might not actually be the best strategy. And my kind of interpretation of what the evidence is suggests that you're better off just not talking about it and reducing these things incrementally over time, rather than bringing them to the forefront, talking about them, making a big issue out of them, because then you raise the potential of not only people reacting negatively to even raising it in the first place, but also making these negative views more readily available to people who might otherwise actually be very much against these negative biases and stereotypes. So it kind of suggests that bringing things to the forefront is counterproductive as opposed to the opposite.
Alrighty.
And I'd just like to talk briefly about the ethics of doing this training. Obviously, in the context of there being very little evidence for it, it's clear by now that it's unethical, but I'd just like to talk in a bit more detail about...
So even if it did work, let's just say.
Yeah, like hypothetically, if it did work, does a business have a right to interfere with what's in your head? And we did touch on this a little bit earlier, but I would very much side on no.
Yeah, I mean, any liberal would say no to this. You'd have to be some kind of, you know, extremist or socialist to be like, no, we must re-educate the population into believing what I think they should believe.
Yeah, and as I said earlier, it breeds resentment if you compel people to do it. And to be honest, I don't actually have a negative view of making it voluntary.
Anything voluntary, I don't care about. It's yeah.
There is a small amount of evidence to suggest that people who are already receptive to the message have a very small increase in their bias reduction. So, like I said, it is predicated on some degree of understanding of the unconscious mind. And as I will get into in the second part, the actual test itself wasn't devised for this training. It was just, we want to look at how the unconscious mind works and how it can affect behavior, because there was no real means of testing that. And as I'll get onto in a second, it's very difficult to do so.